On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Lo and behold, here we are, the 21st day of April, 2015. We survived 420. All those poor souls out there injecting the marijuanas and taking and putting little drops of the marijuanas in their eyes. And, yeah, right, we survived 420. I don't know if it's true, but I saw a story earlier today that said mile marker 420 on a highway somewhere in Colorado has had to be replaced by mile marker 419.99 just to keep the stoners from constantly stealing the mile marker sign. Go figure. But it is. It's the 21st day of April, 2015. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. That's where you go if, in fact, you want to say, oh, jump into the chat room, the live multimedia real-time rollicking good-time experience that is The Horn. Just go to headonradionetwork.com/chatroom. Pick yourself out a screen name. Pick yourself out a password. And hop right in. It's a rousing extravaganza of an experience. Oh, hi. I'm Bob Kincaid. And thank you. Thank you very kindly, Randy. Randy noting via email, bobkincaid@gmail.com, loud and clear on iTunes on my Mac, Bob. Wonderful. One of these days, we will actually get relisted at iTunes Radio. That is some sort of, that requires an act of Congress, or, I don't know, the permission from the moldering corpse of Steve Jobs. God. We were on iTunes Radio for a very long time, and then way back several years ago when my when our entire operation went because of the derecho, we weren't able to send a stream out, and therefore got removed. Thanks, guys. But we're working on it, like a million other things that we're working on. Yeah. Of course, a gentle reminder as we head downhill toward the end of April, this is a listener-supported operation. And occasionally a Bob-supported operation. When I make a little money on the side, I turn it back around into The Horn. Did that last month, as a matter of fact. That's why we finished the way we did, in large part, alongside some significant help, well, from all of you. But it is a listener-supported operation, and we've got about $500 to close the week, and about $900 to close the month. And the PayPal interface is at headonradionetwork.com. Under the tab Contribute, of course, we haven't put the mailing address up there yet. I need to do that sometime. But if you prefer to participate by the U.S. Mail Service, and Bossman Wayne tells me that it's the mailbox has been a frightening echo chamber full of spiders lately, the mailing address is The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, B-E-C-K-L-E-Y, W-V, 25801, with checks and money orders being made payable not to Bob Kincaid, but to The Horn, because that makes it possible for, for Boss Man Wayne to deal with them, because he does all that stuff. Okie doke. And hopefully that'll, I want to send out thanks, by the way, to Joan and Joseph, who helped us finish up last night to the good, after the program was over. That's humongously important. Subscribe. Not out there. We've got a little handful of subscribers. You know, you can, when you go over to the PayPal interface, you can make it a recurring subscription if you wish. And those are very, very handy. I mean, if we were to sit down and think about what it would take, well, there are a small handful of subscribers, and it is very, very good to know that you're there. You are very, very much appreciated. And anybody else that wants to jump in, there's several options. You can choose, you know, 5, 10, 15, 20, 50, 100, whatever, on a monthly basis. And it makes things, it makes things considerably better. Where to go? Well, I'll tell you where we're going to go. Being as how this here 21st day of April is a Tuesday, that means it is, of course, Titanic Tuesday on the horn. Titanic Tuesday being so named because of something our buddy Jim heard years ago via the 962nd tier right-wing blatherer in Beckley, who, fielding a call from one of his mouth-breathing, knuckle-walking followers, mouth-walking, knuckle-breathing followers, they're even weirder, you know, he had a delightful assortment of birthers, ninthers, deathers, tenthers, baggers, birchers, booger-eaters, libertarians, republicans, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing Christians, that kind of thing, and they were a delight. One of them picked up the phone one morning and called and said, "Steve! How come it is you reckon they is seashell fossils in West Virginia's rocks? We ain't nowhere near the ocean." To which our 962nd tier right-wing talker responded, "Well, caller, that's because of the movement of the Titanic plates." No word yet on the movement of the Titanic tablecloth crumb scraper. Still waiting. Yeah, Titanic plates. So, ever since that day, Tuesdays have been devoted to Titanic displays of right-wing intellect in America, and sometimes even the world. And I think we got to. It'll take a little while to work through this, but we've got a dandy for this evening. But before we get into the dandy, let's have a bit of an appetizer, shall we? We'll set the Wayback Machine for yesterday, because yesterday was April 20th, and, well, the folks over at Fox News TV Radio Rwanda wanted to make sure everybody was adequately warned about the dangers of injecting the marijuanas. This is more of a sit-and-giggle kind of thing. This isn't hockey puck material, per se. It's just kind of fun. It comes from that goofy morning program with Steve Ducey and Brian Kilmeade and the Elizabeth Hasselbeck. And they had this guy on by the name of Dr. David Murray, whose sole purpose in life, apparently, is to crusade against the marijuanas. You remember how stupid reefer madness was? Because I remember during my misspent youth sitting around, the midnight movie. Everybody'd get all sideways and go to the midnight movie, and it would be a double feature of something like, say, Reefer Madness and Led Zeppelin's The Song Remains the Same. One night, somewhere around Halloween, it was the Rocky Horror Picture Show, but mostly just rock and roll movies with a little bit of creative stupidity thrown in. That was back before monster mega cinema complexes controlled the entire movie-going landscape. And, well, I think the heyday, the golden age, came and went pretty quickly because, admittedly, a bunch of stoned people watching movies at midnight can get a little messy, and the rednecks were always sneaking the beer in and that kind of thing. Ah, thank you, Jeremy in Vermont. Loud and clear, Bob. Nothing wrong. just slacking in my confirmation this evening. Well, don't let it happen again, Jeremy. Okay. Anyway, so Dr. Murray came on to warn those hip cat youngsters about the dangers of the marijuana. Let's check in with Dr. Murray, who may or may not be, I can't tell, you know, sometimes he may or may not be a giant lizard from outer space, but maybe that's just the marijuana's not talking, but seeing. Right? Yeah. Well, that's some scary-ass intro music, isn't it? Man, if somebody had been at the mix desk, you know, panning that back and forth, all the little stoners. Well, wait, do any stoners watch Fox? Maybe for just the buzz. Wow, did you hear that? Oh, wow, just back and forth. It was like Fox was in my left ear, and then they were in my right ear, and then they were back in my left ear. Oh, dude. Yeah. So, and the scary music is accompanied by a scary graphic. Going to pot. Hey, what are we going to do with all of these young hip cat youngsters out there breathing their marijuana? They'll never vote Republican again because they'll all be dirty hippies. Yeah. You know, we have gotten to a point in American culture where it's more than just young folks smoking dope. I mean, the real dope-smoking generation is up into their 80s now. You reckon a majority of Americans have probably smoked cannabis by now? Not to turn this into the All Cannabis All the Time Network or anything, but really. I'm 52, and I was way behind on it. I mean, there's references. Good God, how old would Jack Kerouac be now? Because there are references to smoking tea. T-E-A-T. I went to find some tea, but it turned out to be oregano that some Mexican sold me on a hungry backstreet jazz-infused night in Denver. You know, that kind of stuff. I mean, Shel Silverstein, The Great Smokeout. When was that produced? Late 60s, early 70s? I first heard it when it was tucked away in the cutout bin at the Gospel Voice of Northwest Alabama. Never to be played. Naturally, I listened to it. I mean, there was all sorts of demon, good demon rock and roll came in there, but only God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing Christian music got played. Yeah. But going to pot. Now, tell us about it, Brian Kilmeade and Dr. Murray.
It's 420, also known as National Marijuana Day. And now, more than ever, there's a new high coming from various forms of pot. So,
a new high? As opposed to the old high? What, does this do something besides give you the munchies and if you smoke too much, make you a little paranoid? Dude, is the towel under the door? And apparently Fox has elevated it to an official national holiday. It's National Marijuana Day. Is Hallmark putting out cards yet? I didn't go look.
What are the different types and what are the dangers? Let's ask Dr. David Murray, former Hudson Institute Center for Substance Abuse Policy. And thanks so much for joining us.
I'm surprised his name isn't Studenko.
He used to run that element of the Hudson Institute. Let's tap into your expertise. For example, we hear the term skunk. What should we think of?
A skunk? Oh, I must be wrong. Small, furry animal, striped tail. No, not Pew. Le Pew. Pepe Le Pew is my name. No, wrong skunk. I'm such a geezer. My son had to explain to me today the colloquial meaning of the word thirsty. Who knew?
Skunk is a new form of crossbred marijuana that has intensified levels of the neurotoxin, the intoxicating element, THC.
It's a neurotoxin. THC. Jeremy noting, Bob, that Fox News intro music for the pot piece was like a version of Chariots of Fire when they're running with the torches. Well, why do you think they're running with the torches? They're running to pot. I mean, you gotta. Oh no, that's Quest for Fire. Sorry, wrong guy's running with fire. My bad. And why are Dr. Murray's eyes so squinty? I realize I'm talking about the video, but really, those are some pretty squinty eyes. And by the way, these are marijuanas that have been crossbred with what? Other marijuanas, okay?
It runs at levels of 20% to 30% THC. That contrasts with the marijuana of the Cheech and Chong days when it was only 3% to 4%. So you're talking 6 to 7 times more powerful, more potent, and it's really getting people blasted and blitzed in a hurry.
Okay, but here's the funny thing. The Hudson Institute was out there having hissies about the marijuanas back when it was 4% to 6%, like in the Cheech and Chong era. Yeah, which is right after the Jurassic era or the Carboniferous age or what? The Cannabisiferous age. There we go. Yeah, see? Hey, wait, I'm going to give me one of those for that. The Cannabisiferous age. You try saying that 3 times fast. Yeah, so people are out there getting blitzed. See, I've said blitzed. That means I'm hip. And the young people will listen to me and do God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing things like drinking lots of alcohol instead of smoking the marijuanas.
It's widespread, coming largely out of Colorado and that market, as new forms are appearing, and it really gets people loaded.
It does. It really gets people loaded. You know, they get all high, and they get out in their cars, and they drive really, really slow. Assuming, of course, they can even find their cars, because remember, they're blitzed on skunk. Dude, let's go slow driving, but first let's find the car. Oh, there it is, okay. All set with the bumper for this evening. Let's hear the deeply incisive question coming from millionaire broadcast professional Brian Kilmeade.
And by the way, this is to underline the fact that this is dangerous, more dangerous than you're being led to believe. That's why we're talking about it, not to sell it. Butter is another term. What is it? B-U-D-D-E-R.
Oh, we're learning all kinds of new... drug speak here on the Fox News. Emery and Eileen can be on the... If we're sitting at... Okay, Eileen, if we're sitting at dinner and somebody says, pass the butter, is that going to mean something about the marijuanas? Or is it going to be that delicious... lactose-based dairy milk fat goo that tastes so good on my morning English muffin? And it's clogging up my arteries. Then again, all this blitz, it sounds like it's a brand name. And man, you got any Doritos? I'm suddenly kind of hungry.
Butter takes the next step into an arena we haven't even seen before. This is unprecedented. Butter is the concentrate, an extract of all the marijuana THC. They produce it by running butane through the marijuana leaf and extract the pure THC. The potency levels are extraordinary, 70 to 90% potency.
How about that? They run it through the leaf, not the buds. I mean, it would kind of make sense if it was called budder, B-U-D-D-E-R, that it would be. But they run it through the leaves. And did you notice, and it must have had an impact on him, did you notice that Brian Kilmeade had to point out, now we're not talking about all this to get you excited about it, we're trying to warn you, this is 80% THC butter. Okay, I don't want to miss anything.
Marijuana THC, they produce it by running butane through the marijuana leaf and extract the pure THC. The potency levels are extraordinary, 70 to 90% potency. People take a single hit from vaporizing this stuff, and they're completely blitzed. It's leading to hallucinations, it's leading to bizarre behavior, and it's very much increasing the risk of addiction and being trapped by this drug.
So, am I on? Because, see, the one thing that there seems to have been a common agreement on is that while nicotine is chemically addictive, oh, yes, Lord Jesus, it is more addictive than heroin, which is also chemically addictive, while alcohol is chemically addictive, there's always been a common understanding that, well, you know, you might become psychologically attached to cannabis, but you're never going to actually get addicted. Yes, Barbie, as a matter of fact, this is Mary Jo... Well, it was actually yesterday, Mary Joanna Edification Day. Go figure. Suddenly, I guess, at 80% levels, THC is suddenly transforms itself and becomes chemically addictive and hallucinogenic? I wonder if maybe somebody just maybe pranked old Dr. Murray and gave him a little hit of white barrel or orange sunshine or something. No, that's the marijuana's melting. It melts in your brain, not in your mouth. This butter stuff sounds pretty exciting. This is practically a public service announcement.
It's leading to hallucinations, it's leading to bizarre behavior, and it's very much increasing the risk of addiction and being trapped by this drug.
And by bizarre behavior, if it leads to bizarre behavior, that leads me to believe that the entire staff of Fox News TV Radio Rwanda is probably blitzed out of their freaking minds. Note coming in from Steve in New York City, who sees where this is all going, clear as a bell. What's next? The conspiracy to sap and impurify our precious bodily fluids? Fluoridation? Fluoride? Fluoride mandrake? In children's ice cream? Fluoride? Yeah. Irish Dave asking, any truth to the rumor that Mono, the one true Satan GMO pot, will be marketed as demon weed? Kind of gives a whole nother meaning to Tea Party, huh? Tea. See, the Kerouacian tea. Yeah. Can you imagine some 20-something, do we call them millennials? Some 20-something watching this on Fox News TV Radio Rwanda and just laughing? Do they not understand that after 100 years practically of lying about cannabis, that maybe the better approach would be to tell the truth? I know. Too much to hope for, isn't it? Oh, well. They'll have that. But still, you know, maybe, someday, somehow. Let's get back to the silliness, though, shall we? Yeah, why not?
It's possibly the most dangerous because you have no idea what you're getting and when it's going to hit.
Huh? What was that? What was that, Brian Kilmeade?
Increasing the risk of addiction and being trapped by this drug. We've never seen this before.
Edibles possibly the most dangerous because you have no idea what you're getting and when it's going to hit.
Brian, buddy, see what I said? Did there, buddy? Here's a hint. It's going to hit after you ingest it somehow. They haven't said. See, I'm confused here. Because they're calling it butter, but does that mean it's an edible, or does that mean do you smear it on? I don't know. Oil, I get. I understand oil. Butter. Yeah, puff, pass the butter. Jeez. Well, as usual, you know, the stupid is strong with these ones. What's new, right? Yeah. I just thought it'd be kind of fun to start the program with a little silliness before we wander off into the swamp. Because there's a lot of swamp out there. A lot of swamp. Okay, lizard people, wrap it up.
Edibles are remarkable because people eat.
Oh, okay, so it is an edible. Butter is like butter. Why no mention in here of the fact that there are people who are getting relief from, say, seizure disorders? The ever-present reference to relief from glaucoma, relief from pain. I don't know. Anybody want to walk through this? What is the vested interest? Because Fox doesn't do anything without a reason. What's their vested interest in trying to sow fear about a fairly benign substance? I mean, sure, granted, concentration is an issue, I guess. I mean, look, you got beer at 5%, but if you run the alcohol content up to, 40%, it ain't beer anymore, it's liquor, and you have to have more chemical processes to get it up there. That's distilling, not brewing. Right? But just, well, really, what's their motive?
Dangerous because you have no idea what you're getting and when it's going to hit.
Edibles are remarkable because people eat a small amount, don't feel the effect because it's taken orally, so they eat some more. Then they have the whole candy bar. And an hour later, suddenly hits them hard, and right. They are basically just frightened by what happens to
Synthetics?
Them.
Synthetics?
So after 2 minutes and 10 seconds of fear-mongering, what we come away with is that they get scared. So that's it, isn't it? Fear. Fear. Lock up your kids. Make sure they can't get hold of the butter or any of that other marijuana. Quit injecting. Don't take them to church and sit them in the pews and let them learn to fear God, not weed. Is that it? All we have is fear. And fear. And a little more fear. Ron's right there with me. Ron says, well, there you go. Remember, we have nothing to fear but fear itself, yada, yada, yada. Steve noting, relief from pain? Lizard brains are incapable of compassion. Well, there's that, too. All right, wrap it up. Wrap it up, fellas. Close up the paranoia parade. Huh? What? Where? Who?
Synthetics are a new form. Chemical contamination sprayed on a leaf that smoked.
Okay, you lion sacks of dung. We've run straight from natural substances into synthetics, which are actually not cannabis. Listen to this seamless segue.
Or later, suddenly hits them hard, and they are basically just frightened by what happens to them.
Synthetics?
Synthetics are a new form. Chemical contamination sprayed on a leaf that smoked. It's like putting Drano on your breakfast cereal. You don't know what you're getting. It's leading to bizarre...
Wait, dumbass. It's not like putting Drano on your breakfast cereal, because if you put Drano on your breakfast cereal, you pretty much know you've got Drano on your breakfast cereal, and you're a dumbass in the first place. Because everybody knows Drano... Oh, Jesus. I don't know if... The synthetics are an entirely different thing that is, and they are a direct response to the stupidity of cannabis prohibition. Dateline, Bradenton, Brevard County, Florida. A man high on flacca attacked an officer, proclaimed himself God, and had sexual relations with a tree. According to a report, some great journalism here from the Bradenton Herald, Kenneth Crowder, age 41, was seen running naked through a Brevard County community. He was then stopped by a Melbourne police officer and charged with resisting arrest with violence. Click Orlando reported, and I don't know if Click Orlando is a website, a publication, or the name of one of the up-and-coming journalists of South Florida. It could be all three at the same time. The officer used a taser, but Crowder, who pulled the electric probes from his body, then punched the officer and tried to stab the cop with his badge. We're not entirely sure whose badge it was, the officer's or Click Orlando's or Kenneth Crowder's, because this is some top-notch journalism. The officer then punched the suspect, who said he was Thor. Crowder was charged with resisting arrest with violence after police managed to subdue him. Flacca is a variation of synthetic substances known as bath salts and delivers a cheap, powerful high while acting as an amphetamine, according to officials. The drug can be snorted, smoked, or taken by mouth and can cause violent behavior. In 2011, federal authorities banned a number of the chemicals used in bath salts. The active ingredient in flacca, however, has not yet been banned, authorities said. Do I have to tell you, having related this story to you, do I have to tell you that Kenneth Crowder, aged 41, of apparently Brevard County, Florida, is white? Because let's just check that laundry list. He was tasered, but he pulled the electric probes from his body, punched the officer, tried to stab the cop with his badge, and then fucked a tree. And proclaimed himself God and or Thor or both. And is alive to this day. But make no mistake, even though they're trying... they're trying desperately to make it sound like... did you notice it's sprayed on a leaf? What kind of leaf? It's not a pot leaf, because pot's still not legal in most places. Oregano? Parsley? Jimson weed? Don't know. And, of course, because that was not very good journalism, we still don't know what the tree was wearing. This will be done in a minute. Got a caller online, and we're going to go there.
Behavior of frightened people
right.
who are going into hallucinations.
States may be trying to legalize it, but it doesn't mean the danger's diminished. There's a lot of danger out there.
Ooh! And while we've had our fun, this is a classic example of the misdirection and outright lying that goes on at Fox News TV Radio Rwanda. Listen to that! Okay, it's been a discussion. It starts out a discussion of butter and high-potency cannabis marijuanas that can be injected by children as young as fetuses, right? Then it shifts to synthetics, and we're over into bath salts and spice and chemicals that aren't cannabis. But listen to what Brian Kilmeade says.
Bizarre behavior of frightened people
right.
who are going into hallucinations.
States may be trying to legalize it, but it doesn't mean the danger's diminished. There's a lot.
States are not trying to legalize synthetics and bath salts. States are moving as quickly as legislative bodies can to ban the chemicals. The problem with these things, however, being that since they're chemicals, you can monkey with one little molecule or one little molecule in a chain, and the next thing you know, it's not that chemical anymore, and it's back on the market. And, well, prohibition works real good, doesn't it?
A danger out there, and thanks for giving us four different kinds. Appreciate it. Appreciate you joining us, Dr. David
Thank
Murray.
Try not to, well, good luck finding your car, Dr. David Murray. Those squinty eyes. I don't know about you, buddy. I mean, he's squinting harder than Clint Eastwood in the sun. Just because I noticed on the Gizmo phone that this call is coming in from Hawaii, let's run straight over to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
How you doing, Bob?
Pretty good.
Hey. Hold on.
Yeah.
Sorry, Bob.
That's okay.
My wife is hollering at me.
Who have I got?
I got Kenny in Hawaii.
Well, that's what I thought. I just wanted to make sure.
On the Big Island.
The big, beautiful island.
Yes. Watching the helicopters go by like normal. We live on the flight route going to the volcano.
Oh, I thought maybe they were flying over looking for the butter factory or maybe the bath salts or something.
No, actually, we've gone probably 3 or 4 months without them looking for weed for a change. We voted it down a couple years back, and they slowly done away with it, and they've not necessarily done away with it, but they've kind of I guess they lost their funding. That's how we voted it down, you know. But so whenever the DEA wants to come in, they just say, "Oh, they're doing it," so they pay for it, and they can still do it because the DEA is federal funded.
Right, exactly. And what a brilliant use of federal funds it is.
Oh yeah. But I had to call. I wanted to call in yesterday, being 4:20, but I was busy being 4:20, of course. But
big day
today. I thought you were talking about it again, so I was like, "Oh, I had to." Especially when them talking about butter, I was like, "Butter that makes edibles, not butter that you smoke. You don't smoke butter."
Well, see, they didn't make that clear for quite a long time.
Of course,
because I can't imagine smoking butter.
No,
I mean, I tried snorting coke one time, but I about drowned and never tried it again. Right. Bad
I
joke,
like
but
drinking coke. Ugh. Too much damn high fructose corn syrup.
Well, see, I opt for the Mexican variety in the grocery stores now because it's got pure cane sugar in it, and, you know, you want a rum and coke or something, that's the way to go.
Yeah, that's about the only time I drink a coke nowadays is when I have a Crown and Coke. That's the only little vice every once in a while, but that's only at a party or something. But I hardly ever touch alcohol because it just does not do the body good.
Well, I can't imagine much call for it out in paradise. But then again, that's me showing my geographic bias.
Yeah. Well, he was trying to equate the same, synthetics with the same thing as marijuana. It's just, you know, of course, everything they're going to do is try to do disinformation to us, you know. They couldn't now actually put any truth, you know, in their reporting.
No, not at all. Because I'll bet you there are any number of people that a producer there could have reached out to, because the stories have begun to proliferate, especially for parents seeking relief for seizure disorders in their children who don't respond to traditional capitalist, for-profit pharmaceuticals, that kind of thing. And lo and behold, a little wee little corner of a brownie, and everything's fine.
Right, you're seeing very much evidence with that. I mean, the kids were on as many as 13 chemical medicines, and they're going down to 2 or 3 pills that they have to take beyond the edible marijuana. So, you know, and then they're even coming out with certain strains that are devoted to certain types of ailments. And I should know this. I've been breeding marijuana for 20-plus years, so I've got one strain that works on nighttime. It is a nighttime strain.
Well, I don't want you to give away any trade secrets or anything, Ken. But
no, it's no trade secret. That's the thing.
You're just crossbreeding like Corollas Linnaeus, right? Or
yeah, it's like a tomato.
No, Gregor, whatever, the Swiss monk or whatever he was. Yeah, just you crossbreed for various properties, right?
Right, and it's not like I've done all this myself. No, this is. Everybody has done this. It's not like it's a single effort. This is a joint effort between the whole community. You know, so it's not like, the propaganda is maybe out there, but nobody believes it anymore. You know, maybe the right wing.
Well, and let's remember that they're just terrified of they're terrified of everything. But, so is it, because you've opened the door to me having a learning experience now, is it a matter of is it all the same species, sativa versus indica and all of that, or what?
Now, the sativas are what you call the, like, Thai equatorial varieties. They come from your, your equator. You know, you have anything near the equator would generally be like a sativa. And it's a real tall, lanky plant, and that's going to be generally more for, you know, what they call a head high, or, spacey kind of disorientated. That one's a little bit more, to some people make them feel like they're tripping, you know, just kind of because it can be so intense sometimes. Now, the indica is more for pain relief and body, and that's where you hear people, the term called couch lock. You know, that's a great term because it's like what it means is like your muscles are so relaxed that you don't want to get off the couch. Your muscles are, they feel like jello. And that's great for people who have muscle spasms. There is need for this.
That's and so, without in a totally, I guess, underground way, this research has been going on for generations, hasn't it?
Yes, I mean it just all of a sudden disappeared. All of a sudden in this century, this one century, all of a sudden we demonized something that we've worked with for thousands of years.
And the funny thing is, you know, our Dr. Murray here in our Fox clip, Ken, referenced, it's not that stuff that Cheech and Chong were smoking. I guess Dr. Murray has never sat through a Cheech and Chong movie, Up in Smoke or any of the sequels, because they were in search of, you know, I mean, that wasn't Mexican ditch weed they were smoking.
No.
And, I mean, I come from an era, and probably you do too, you know, when you would hear phrases like, Maui Wowie, or Colombian Gold, or Mexican Ditchweed.
Right.
Because it was, I guess, more geographically described. But now, if I understand correctly, if you walk into a dispensary in, say, Colorado, or a medical dispensary in California, it's being offered more along the lines of properties that you're describing. Is that, I mean, almost like the way you'd go to a
what strength you want,
right? The way you'd go to a bottle shop and you'd say, well, you know, that and there'd be a little placard that says, this Puy Fousey has overtones of cherry and old baseball glove under tooled leather, and I mean they're beginning to describe cannabis that way, right? I mean, this tastes like grapefruit. This tastes like bubble gum. I mean.
For sure.
Yeah.
I'll give you the name of the I'm, this is a trade secret. The name of that weed is the garlic ass. If that says anything to you, that describes the plant to the tea. It stinks so bad, it smells like either garlic or ass.
Wow. And yet somehow or another, people still manage to inhale the smoke.
Because it's very enjoyable, actually. It's just, that's the best way of describing it, because it is dank.
Wow. Because I've heard of bubblegum kush and some grapefruit something or other and cherry bomb but never garlic ass. I guess it hasn't made it this far east. Which is surprising, because we've got a lot of homegrown entrepreneurs here in the hills, Eastern Kentucky, West Virginia. A lot of national forest to work in, and a lot of people work in hydroponic, I guess.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm originally from Virginia.
Yes. Yeah.
And I slowly moved my way across country, you know, farther south as far as I could, and got to New Orleans, and that wasn't far enough south, and besides just being New Orleans itself, I knew I was going to get flooded, and so we left 6 months before the Katrina hit, and we just missed that. And we've been over here 13 years now.
Amazing. And life is just good on the Big Island.
That's good. I mean, it's what you make of it anywhere. You know, it's more expensive here for sure, but you know, it's more free. So,
where are you? Since you're on the Big Island, where are you relative to the volcano?
About 18 miles from it. not as far away as I would like to be, but you know, about as good as we could afford.
And that affords you hopefully enough time to sort of run, right?
Oh, it's not one of those pyroclastic type volcanoes. I don't think they've ever had a pyroclastic flow in Hawaii ever. What they have is these very slow bubbling up, slow flows. You know, they've had a little faster ones, but it's like as far back in their history, they really have, you know, it's like they can stand there and watch it. It's so slow.
So is
same thing.
So even in a tropical paradise or Appalachia or whatever, are most of these strains happening hydroponically, or are they being grown in the wild and crossbred and whatnot?
No, this Hawaii. I mean, that's why most people like it here. You do it outdoor.
Huh. Nice.
You can do it in greenhouse. You can do it hydroponically. You can do it however. You know, there is no limit. Just like a tomato, you know, you can do a tomato. You ever seen the upside down tomato thing that they sold for a while? It's like you plant a tomato and it grows upside down, then curves back up.
Yeah, I saw one of those.
I've seen somebody grow a plant in one of those. That was the funniest looking thing.
Of course, I've heard around here people grow cucumbers on chicken wire so that they hang straight down and grow nice and straight, but. Sadly, I don't know anybody who's engaged in the. Well, we still take a pretty dim view of it, at least legally around here. I think West Virginia would do well, considering our tourism industry, to legalize it. But I don't know if our legislature, especially now that it's comprised by a majority of dead from the neck up Republicans, have that kind of brains. I mean, they just spent a legislative session banning the sale of Tesla automobiles in West Virginia. I mean, this is West Virginia. I imagine there's just not a hell of a lot of people lining up to buy $85,000 cars, but, you know, that's how they spent their time.
All right.
It's a beautiful thing.
Just, you know, over here we have a majority kind of Democrat rule, but at least we don't have the dispensaries yet, but we're slowly, you know, the legislature is working on it. I think they're putting the vote, like, in the next 6 months they're going to vote on it, and more than likely, they're going to vote for it. But the thing is, they're not even going to institute it for two more years. It's like, how long can they drag it out? You know, that's all that it's coming down to over here anymore. It's like, we know it's happening. We're just waiting and waiting and waiting.
Well, God knows the tourism, Hawaii already exists in large part on tourism.
Very much.
Will it go even further through the roof if there's total legalization?
Oh, they better, because Jamaica's getting ready to. I mean, Jamaica's finally waking up. They actually legalized medical marijuana and for religious purposes. So that means the Rastafarians will be able to finally be you know, without the threat, you know, that's going to be.
That means a lot of America.
Like crazy.
That might also mean some serious Rastafarian conversion. I don't know. Oh, God. Well, I'm glad to hear from you, Ken. It's been a while, and I don't know what kind of a strain it is to make the call into the studio, but it is awfully good to hear from you, and we're happy to know that you're doing well.
I'm usually working during the day, and I try to listen, but I can't really call. But every once in a while, and this is too big of a subject. But one more point I really wanted to get at.
Sure.
It's this thing they keep saying over and over, the weed is stronger now than it was then. Okay? That is actually great because you don't have to get... The only thing that possibly could be harmful about marijuana would be the carcinogens of smoking it.
Right.
So the only thing you're doing is actually making somebody have to smoke less. So how is that a bad thing?
Well, that was the same thing that was occurring to me because... You know, it's probably not good, whether it's cigarettes or Cuban cigars or, twisting up a big old number or just standing downwind from my barbecue smoker. It's probably not a good idea to be breathing a whole lot of smoke.
Right. But they still have yet to find any relative effects from the actual marijuana smoke. So I know quite a few people that are in their late 80s that still smoke, and they're not dying of lung cancer. So they've smoked since the 60s. Now, I don't know too many cigarette smokers that can say that.
No. And, of course, a lot of that has to do with the vile crap they put into them to make them nice and even, you know, make tobacco.
150 or 160, 170-something chemicals in each cigarette?
Yeah, for cigarette smokers out there who want to just sort of find out empirically for themselves, get a package of the, and there's no, you know, there's no such thing as a safe cigarette, but for the cigarette smokers out there, compare the taste of a natural American spirit brand made with organic tobacco, 100% additive free. Compare that to your average Marlboro. They don't taste anything, they don't taste even remotely similar.
Right.
And
the chemicals that are, they've admitted they add the chemicals to make them more addictive.
Yeah. And yet, so we've managed to, through crossbreeding and whatnot, to increase the THC content of cannabis, and yet somehow or another, no one's managed to make it addictive.
No.
Doesn't that tell you something? I mean, because to be quite honest, for a long time, especially before the rise of the American cannabis, I guess, counterculture industry, for lack of a better term, you know, weed was moved by organized crime, who aren't known for having profound morals. If they could have figured out a way to make weed, addictive, don't you think they would have?
Well, that's really 90% of the reason I got into growing. I wanted to make sure the plant that I was going to consume didn't have this carcinogen. Okay, this chemical from this pesticide, this herbicide that they were spraying in the 70s and 80s, what was it, paraquat?
Oh, God, yeah.
They were spraying paraquat on these plants so that people wouldn't smoke them, but some people still did. I'm not one of them, thank God, but, you know, I know people that did, and now their lungs are ruined.
Well, I remember the paraquat scare because there was really no way, you could know if you had sprayed weed in the United States, so people just smoked their dope like they'd been smoking their dope. Another case of, you know, great moments in the war on drugs, of course.
Yeah.
Well, let me ask you this, if it's a question you can answer, Ken. So with all the strains and everything, I mean, quality has increased dramatically in the last few years. Can your average buying it on the black market person, what's the chance that, you know, your weed has been sprayed with, you know, pesticides or, you know, various and sundry different fertilizers and whatnot?
Now, if you're getting it off the street or something, you know, those chances could be, you know, 50-50. Who knows? I mean, you know, I haven't dealt with that in so many years. that's the whole point of doing this, because I wanted something safe, you know, and that's the whole, like you were saying earlier, you know, drug dealers or whatever are not known to be, you know, the most trustworthy. So, you know, in England, what was going on, they were actually taking the weed and they do a process where they remove the crystals, but then they were spraying like a glass substance onto the weed and selling it, and there was no actual THC, but there was actually, it looked like crystals on the weed, but it was actually glass.
Nice.
I found this in London, it's probably about 10 years ago now, but, you know, just all the different things, you know, like you're saying, you know. So why not have a regulated market where I can go and get a safe substance?
Right. And what? How interesting is it to note that that organized crime has a better moral sense than the tobacco industry, while we're at it? I guess no one's really surprised, but... Well, Ken, it's awful good. It's awfully good to hear from you. I wish you a sunny and beautiful day there on the Big Island, and don't be a stranger.
I'll try not to be. I tried calling in Tom the other day, sat there on hold the whole time. Then the show went off. So I was like, I guess he didn't want to hear me.
Well, one of the nice things you can always get through here, just about.
Now, I wanted to call him about the Eric Garner thing, because it is just, you know, for one thing, we don't have that problem out here in Hawaii. For one reason is we have community police. The police have to live here. They can't just live somewhere else and fly in or something, you know?
Right. And if they're in the community and...
They respect the community. They grew up here. They understand the people's here. They understand their, you know... It's so weird. That's why I'm so disappointed in what's happening on the mainland. It's just dumb.
Well, I have a feeling there's more disappointment. Well, I don't know. I can't imagine living in Hawaii, and yeah, it's a state and everything, but it's so far away from the mainland, you do wind up feeling kind of divorced from the craziness here, don't you?
Especially since it doesn't happen here so much. You feel like, what is different over there? You know, what is going on, you know?
Well, what's going on here is a raving case of, well, the paranoids.
Yeah.
Only it's not because everybody's getting high, it's because, I guess everybody's brains have been twisted by, you know, a media complex that sows fear. I mean, look at the Fox piece there. It was nothing but fear. There was no factuality in it. They brought out some tired old fear monger from some, probably pharmaceutical funded institute, and you know the people. So Emery and Eileen watch it, and they're sitting around Sunday dinner looking at their great grandchildren, going, "I hope you're not licking the bath salts and toads and stuff, because I learned on Fox that that's real bad." And the kids just look at Grandpa and go, "Well, it's Grandpa. They're that way."
Yeah, the way he wrapped it, the bath salts and the chemicals in, and then all at the end he's like, "Oh, but they're trying to legalize it," you know, so making it seem like they're trying to legalize bath salts and all, you know, all it's all under the same category under marijuana.
Right,
know?
because if cannabis gets legalized for medical uses or even for recreation, well, that automatically means that bath salts are going to. But I mean, these things are sold in West Virginia. They're not good, and they're there, and people have become addicted to them because of the war on drugs, because it was harder to get weed.
Well, that happened over here in the 80s or 90s. I don't know when it was, before I was here anyway. They started having the ICE epidemic.
Yeah.
It was because they were funding the helicopter so hard that they were pulling up everybody's plants. And so nobody could grow any outdoor weed, and so what they do, they start importing damn ICE.
Yeah.
Or what, I don't know if, well, ICE is what, methamphetamine on the mainland, they call it ICE out here.
No, I knew what you were talking about, yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Well,
but, you know, which, which is better for the people, a little marijuana or some ice? Let's give them ice.
Well, what's better for the people, a little cannabis or, you know, a 1.75-liter bottle of House of Usher scotch?
Right, right. You know, one's a poison, one's actually healthy.
Yeah. I remember I've got a friend who is big into naturals and holistic healing and all that, and he once directed me to a website called What If Cannabis Cured Cancer, I think was the name of it. And for once, it wasn't one of those videos, because, you know, you just kind of watched it and went, well, yeah, what if? And if it doesn't, then maybe somebody, you know, doesn't have quite as much pain.
Yeah, well, we were talking with somebody the other day about that, you know, that has a medical condition, that uses it for a medical condition, and that's exactly the aspect we were talking about. What is wrong with quality of life? If it just helps their quality of life before they die, what the hell is wrong with that?
Right. And
that pisses me off so bad. Oh, it pisses me off, because what are you doing? You have no problem with them taking their damn chemical drugs, but, you know, just because a corporation owns that.
Oh, no. If you're admitted to hospice, they'll bring you the 55-gallon drums of Lortab. But, I mean, I'm exaggerating, of course, but...
Well, they'll put you on the morphine drip, which is pretty much opiates, which, you know, right?
And then, and then you just, you know, you drool away the remainder of your days.
Right.
No. And, you know, it's at the end, it's all about responsibility. And I think, I don't know, I mean, the few times that I get to do it anymore, you know, I'm a lightweight. I look really hard at a burning doobie, and I'm high for the next 6 hours, and, you know, that's enough. It's not like sitting down to drink a six pack of beer.
No. But there is different, like I said before, there's different strains for different things. There is a land raised over here from the island Molokai called Molokai Frost. It has been around since the 70s. Now, it is so good that they have not changed it. It is still the same plant from the 70s. It has just been cloned over and over and over and over until it is still alive today.
Wow. So is Maui Wowie still out there?
Somebody has it. I'm sure they do. You know, it's just really hard to come by. And, of course, I'm not on that island, so... But yeah. I've seen almost everything. Kona Gold, I've seen, you know, they have...
Oh, I'd forgotten about that.
when I was 16, I came out here, and that was the first time I smoked any weed, and, oh, my God, it was just amazing. One joint lasts me four islands. One joint was able to do me four islands. Because
well, I've never heard it measured. I've never heard it measured by the island before, Ken. I don't know. Maybe the similarity here, or the comparable here, would be to measure it by mountains.
By mountains. Well, it was the same way here, though. Each island is a mountain, so it was by mountain.
Ken, have yourself a wonderful evening. Thanks for all your input. I really appreciate it.
Okay, sorry for taking up too much time.
Oh, you didn't take up too much time at all. Not at all. Take care.
Y'all take care.
All right, our best to everybody. Bye.
Aloha.
Aloha, indeed. Ken calling from the Big Island. And let's see, 4 minutes past the hour. Let's take our break, open the phone lines. Okay, people are getting excited in the chat room now. A four-island doob? Whoa. Oh, thank you, Ken, for calling in. Great to hear from you. Like I said, 4 minutes past the hour, and thanks going out to Rick. Rick just helped us with the evening's fundraising. We try to raise $150 in any given evening. We're trying to get to the end of the month. Well, maybe even a little bit ahead of schedule, which would be awfully nice. Thank you, Rick. Thank you very kindly. Marty pointing out that Dr. Murray likely never attended a Grateful Dead concert either. No. Marty is apparently considering conversion now. Jamaican reefer? Jamaican man. Reefer and rum. What a retirement. Marty's packing his bags. Oh, yeah. So if you'd like to stand alongside Rick, you're welcome to go to the PayPal interface, help out that way, or the Postal Service. I mentioned the address earlier. We'll take a little break and come back to your calls, perhaps, or, well, the one story that kind of had Titanic Tuesday written all over it. You know the numbers, right? 304-574-8178, 304-574-8178, Skype to Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn, or 304-663-4676, 304-663-HORN. They're all available to you at your leisure. Green News Report, this being Tuesday, the Green News Report is coming up, Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen. Let's check out a little something released by Willie Nelson and Merle Haggard yesterday. This is the horn.
Well, now it's all going to pot, whether we like it or not. Best I can tell, the world's gone to hell, and we're sure gonna miss it a lot. All of the whiskey in Lynchburg, Tennessee, just couldn't hit the spot. I got $100 bill, friend, you keep your pills, cause it's all going to pot. That cackle babble head in the box must think I'm dumb as a rock. Reading me the news while I'm kicking off my shoes, and it's scaring me out of my socks. Admitted a stranger, I'm not. But buddy, let me tell you what. If you ask old Will to say, here's the deal, friends, it's all going to pot. Well, it's all going to pot, whether we like it or not. Best I can tell, the world's gone to hell, and we're all gonna miss it a lot. All the whiskey in Lynchburg, Tennessee, just couldn't hit the spot. Got $100 bill, you can keep your pills, friend, it's all going to pot.
Tuesday, April 21, 2015.
BP's contingency plans were inadequate.
They were screaming, you know, fire, fire, fire. This is not a drill.
There's no one who wants this thing over more than I do. You know, I'd like my life back.
The BP oil disaster in the Gulf of Mexico, 5 years later.
Today, there's no greater threat to our planet than climate change.
As Earth Day comes and goes, President Obama pushes once again for climate action. January to March 2015, the hottest ever recorded. Plus,
we need to work with the rest of the world to negotiate a way to to reduce carbon emissions.
Jeb Bush thinks climate change might actually be a thing.
Wait, what? All of that and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comments.
Climate change can no longer be denied or ignored.
Oh, Mr. President, you continue to misunderestimate the American people. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, with Earth Day upon us once again, we need to remind everyone it's always Earth Day here at the Green News Report, at least for you.
Yes, I think it's a great idea, though, to remind everybody else that it's nice to celebrate the only place in the entire universe that is known to be capable of supporting life.
Yeah, nobody cares.
Yeah, well, in a bit of cosmic irony, this Earth Day is also the fifth anniversary of the day that BP's Deepwater Horizon offshore drilling rig sank to the bottom of the ocean. 5 years ago this week on April 20th, Petroleum Deepwater Horizon.
We're sorry for the massive disruption it's caused to their lives. There's no one who wants this thing over more than I do. You know, I'd like my life back.
Even if we contain the well, and even if the well is capped in mid-August, there's still a significant amount of oil out there.
One of the things that struck me that I think about now as Shell is heading back into the Arctic,
yes,
was the plans that they had when they were drilling in the Gulf of Mexico, the inadequate plans. As you recall, they had a ridiculous emergency response plan, which included evacuating walruses, and they didn't even talk about hurricanes and storms.
They do have plans to evacuate walruses from the Gulf of Mexico, which have not lived there in 3 million years.
And it's unfortunate that walruses were included, and it's an embarrassment that they were included.
Oh, do you think? Now, of course, I'm sure Shell Oil's plans are perfectly adequate to stave off any disaster that happens up in the Arctic, where we have no way to respond. The Coast Guard has been begging, please don't let these rigs go up into the Arctic.
It's pretty stunning that we're still moving headlong into offshore drilling into the Arctic. And looking back to the Gulf, 5 years later, offshore drilling is booming again.
Yay!
And BP is still fighting in court to reduce the billions of dollars it will ultimately pay in punitive fines and damages.
Yeah, to hell with those people who lost their lives, who've lost their businesses. BP's got a profit to turn, baby.
5 years later, tourism has mostly recovered on the Gulf Coast, but tar balls are still washing up on shore, and BP's oil is still hurting commercial fishermen and marine life. Meanwhile, it's getting warmer. The results are in, and the first 3 months of this year combined were the warmest start to any year on record globally, according to NASA. And that increases the odds that 2015 will likely replace 2014 as the hottest year on record.
Wait, so the Earth keeps getting hotter even though the Republicans keep saying it's not happening?
Yeah, that's right.
I can't believe the Earth is not listening to these Republicans.
Meanwhile, in presidential politics, although former Florida Governor Jeb Bush has yet to officially declare a run for the 2016 Republican presidential nomination. At an appearance in New Hampshire over the weekend, he acknowledged that climate change exists.
Wait, what?
I mean, the climate is changing, and I'm concerned about that.
Previously, Jeb Bush had questioned whether humans are responsible. Now he says climate change will be solved with energy conservation and expanding U.S. natural gas. Unlike his fellow Republican presidential contenders, Bush suggested, but did not outright endorse, that the U.S. should lead the U.N. International Climate Treaty.
We have this climate change issue, and we need to work with the rest of the world to negotiate a way to reduce carbon emissions.
Now that's an implicit acknowledgement that humans are causing climate change.
And as snarky as I like to be, I'm happy to note that we finally have a Republican, not officially declared, but a Republican in this race who at least seems to be on planet Earth concerning planet Earth as opposed to the rest of the guys we've seen so far. Cruz, Paul, and Marco Rubio, all of whom are just insane when it comes to pretending this problem doesn't exist.
In honor of Earth Day, President Obama pushed for the U.S. to lead action on climate change in his weekly address, highlighting the historic deal with China that they will cut their emissions.
Because the world's two largest economies came together, there's new hope that with American leadership this year, the world will finally reach an agreement to prevent the worst impacts of climate change before it's too late.
Ah, new hope. I'll take it. May not be realistic, but I'll take it. For much more on those stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find us and follow us on the Facebook and the Twitters at Green News Report. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Fifteen minutes past the hour. Thanks out to Z for the Green News Report. They do an excellent job. Well, I enjoy the heck out of it myself. This is the Horn, Titanic Tuesday, to be specific. And before going back to the phones, one line is open, 304-574-8178, or Skype to Skype. That's open. We've got somebody on the Gizmo line. But just to wrap up the weed discussion of the previous hour, let's take a moment with my senator. Oh, my God. He's now the senior senator from West Virginia. Ouch! Joe Manchin. By the way, according to GovTrack, Joe Manchin is now officially the Republicanist Democratic senator in the entire United States Senate. No surprise, really. He is, after all, Blanche Lincoln with better hair. But he was invited onto the TV this past weekend, where he announced to no particular fanfare that, yes, he's going to stay in the Senate and run for re-election, and that he's not going to run to be governor of West Virginia again, as many had thought, which, again, indicates that he's reached some deal with some Republican to screw some Democrat, because that's how Joe operates. But along the way, in the course of the interview, he decided to talk about something that touches his heart deeply. And he said, this drug culture we have, it is killing America, and it's definitely a number one killer in West Virginia. No, it's not. Now, we have the highest drug overdose, opiate overdose rate in the country. We do. And those aren't mostly heroin overdoses. Those are prescription narcotic overdoses. Huh, how about that? Did I mention that Joe's daughter, I'm not sure if she still does, but at least at one point in time, she was a high-level executive in a pharmaceutical firm. And yeah, she really is. Joe Manchin says the drug culture we have is killing America. Isn't that kind of like what we just heard from Fox a moment ago? No, it's not the drug culture. It's pharmaceutical narcotics, which have legitimate uses, but whose legitimate uses are largely unavailable to people who desperately need them because of the abuse problem. Now, Joe Manchin apparently thinks that drugs are killing more people in West Virginia than mountaintop removal. Of course, he being a big proponent of mountaintop removal, he ignoring the 4,000 statistical excess deaths that occur in West Virginia's mountaintop removal counties every year. Whoops. So that's his purpose now. That's his special purpose. That's the thing I can do, maybe make a difference and change some things and save some people's lives. You know what would save more lives in the United States than trying to do something about pharmaceutical narcotics? Getting rid of the coal industry. Because, what, there are tens of thousands of people who die every year in this country, not just in the coal mining areas of Central Appalachia or Southern Illinois, but who just die from breathing the filth that comes out of coal-fired power plants. Asthmatics thrown into terminal attacks because of particulate matter. And then there's the mercury. And then there's the toxins in the coal ash dumps. And then, yeah, there's mountaintop removal. And the dust that flies off of God knows how many sites that people have to breathe every day of their lives. The bottom line is, you don't hear anybody that's running for president talking about the number one killer in America. And I don't know why. And we keep bringing more powerful drugs on. Why does the FDA keep approving it? I've got two bills right now to try to stop that and not and just go ahead and pass things through that are killers. Well, Joe, you're a killer. Every day Joe Manchin continues to ignore the more than two dozen peer-reviewed science journal articles that point toward the toxic nature of mountaintop removal is another day that Joe is a killer. Because Joe, of course, in addition to simply being an owned, controlled creature of the coal industry, Joe's a coal broker. He's involved in a coal-fired power plant scheme, as a matter of fact, and coal mining. He's a killer. You know, if I had a little time, I'd have turned that into a big-ass essay. Maybe I will. Joe Manchin, hypocrite. Let's run over to the Gizmo line. I suspect we've got Kevin. Hey, Kevin.
Yes, you do.
What's up?
I was listening to your previous caller there, fairly impressed, because I, being out here in Colorado where it's legal, have availed myself of those evil marijuanas, and can't say enough about what it does once I regulated, found the right dosage and the right kind. And it helps. And you don't, yesterday was 420 and you didn't hear a single report of anyone on the marijuana is going wild in the streets and killing people or anything like that. Strange thing, but.
Well, you know, the liberal media probably just suppressed all of that, Kevin.
Yeah, that's probably what it is. It really, you know, when you hear something like that Fox thing, what can you say? I mean, it's like you were saying, the kid looks over to the grandpa and says, that's the way grandpas are. Well, you know,
yeah, and then I kind of fantasized that after that they gave Grandpa a bite of brownie and Grandpa stopped being an asshole.
Exactly, yeah. Because, you know, while I don't know, it's hard to say because people are going to find a way to get high. You don't want to recommend, you don't want to necessarily endorse people getting high or drunk or whatever. But people being people are going to find a way to do it. Once the marijuana was made legal out here, that eliminated a whole lot of things. Chief amongst them was the crime and the incarcerations for carrying an ounce of marijuana. You know, I mean, that, when I was 17, 16, something like that, I saw Reefer Madness for the first time. I'd never smoked pot, never been around anyone that smoked pot. But I instinctively saw it and knew that movie was full of bull. You know, I mean, it was a joke. And yet, we had this guy on Fox News yesterday, I guess it was, or today. Was it yesterday or today he was
on? Yeah,
that
was yesterday. Yeah, Dr. Murray there? Yeah, yesterday.
Yeah. And an alleged doctor on top of it. That's what gets me. Because, you know, why, like you were saying yesterday, there, in theory you can be psychologically addicted to pot, but it is not addictive. And this alleged doctor was trying to equate it with the bath salts and that, and that's just what it made it so maddening to me. So we've got people down here who who are fighting in the various cities, fighting legalization, even though they can see other cities in the state that are benefiting from the tourism, from the sales tax revenue, et cetera, et cetera. We've still got people down here. Well, we shouldn't be doing that. Even if it increases tourism, we shouldn't be doing it. Why not? Give me one good reason. There isn't one.
So it is, I'm just curious, because it's such a buckle of the Bible Belt. It's legal in Colorado. They're doing it in Colorado Springs?
Not in the city, not yet. Now, we just had a city council election. The people out here voted. No one on city council now is under 60. So I'm not real hopeful, but one of the people that wouldn't vote for it last time it came up for a vote is now off council. So I'm kind of hopeful that it'll be legal. Now, it's legal insofar as the medical marijuana, and if the city and county are so close, it might as well be legal here in the city because you don't have far to go, you know, to find a legal, to get it legal. But, you know, it's just, it's stupid. It just comes down to plain stupidity and ignorance upon a lot of people. It's like you talked about prohibition. Prohibition worked well in the 1920s, didn't it? Created a whole new gangster class called Al Capone and Company.
There you go. The mob.
And what has it done with the so-called drug war? And I thought you made an excellent point about the things that are addictive as far as prescription medicines. They have no problem giving that to people. But something like marijuana, oh, no, we can't give this person that because it's a class one, schedule one drug. I never did marijuana up until, a year or so ago, a little over a year ago. But with this chronic pain thing I had, I figured I'd try it because I was kind of desperate. And it's taken me almost a year to really get the dosage regulated to where I'm satisfied with what I'm taking. And I'm not taking a lot. You wouldn't know I'm high, but it's exactly the right amount in my system to take away the pain.
And oddly enough, if you happen to go 4 or 5 or 6 hours without it, you don't find yourself climbing the walls or knocking over pharmacies to no.
Exactly. And man, I could count on, I couldn't count on two hands the number of times I've heard about pharmacies here in the city being held up for prescription drugs.
I wonder because he's up in his lower 60s. I wonder if Joe Manchin ever got high.
Probably. I would bet the people like Joe Manchin that are so preachy are the ones that if you really looked into their background, I bet you would find out they're not the squeaky clean choir boy that you portray themselves as. You know, it's like George Bush, Bush 43, you know.
Right.
That man had a back history of alcoholism and everything else that just never...
There's really no question, because they never actively denied it. They just said, he just said, I'm not going to talk about my events from my misspent youth.
Exactly.
We had a guy in the Oval Office for 8 years who, at the very least, was a recovering cokehead.
Yep.
And now, of course, in the form of Scott Walker, we've got another, albeit different, kind of cokehead interested in the White House. And I think Scott Walker's coke problem is probably worse than George Bush's ever was. You know, the coke brothers.
Yeah, and I'm hopeful the American people will not be fooled by any one of these idiots, but even though I'm not a Clinton supporter, man, they have been vicious the last couple of days on when I've turned on the terrestrial radio. It's literally on every teabag channel. It's Hillary Clinton nonstop, bashing her one way or the other. She's not even, I guess you would say, the presumptive Democratic nominee, but nothing near official. And we saw what happened 8 years ago with her candidacy. So, you know, but they are all over her. And it even goes back to fear with that, too, because you had Obama, the first black man in the White House. Now you're going to have a woman, and they can't have that, you know. What was the article I read today? I can't remember who did it, but he talked about the normal. He wanted things back to normal. And what they were talking about was they wanted it back to the way it was, a white man in the White House. Leonard Pitts was the writer of the article, I forget who he was talking about, was saying this. But it was a right-winger complaining about the fact he wants, you know, things back to normal. And that's their version of normal. And as Pitts pointed out in the last couple of sentences, sorry, it's never going to be normal again, because once that barrier is broken, you know, you may buy off a candidate, and while I'm not impressed with Hillary Clinton in a lot of ways, she stands a very good chance of being elected, considering the clan car that is the GOP. And, you know, my quandary is I don't want another 8 years like the 8 years we just had, where Congress pretty much does nothing just to block the so-called Obama agenda. And I'm afraid that's what they'll do with Hillary. And, you know, but I wouldn't, look, you give me Hillary Clinton over any right-winger. I don't care who it is. I'll take Hillary Clinton over any right-winger. May not be a lot of difference, but it would be a difference that I couldn't ignore. So, you know, I mean, it's just, I just had to call in about that. And I did want to wish Jim, by the way, if you're listening, Jim, welcome to Colorado. You picked a great weekend to arrive. And I hope you get settled in there. I think you're up in Denver. I hope you get settled in up there. And, you know, just wish you the best out here.
Well, maybe y'all can have a get-together at some point.
Well, one of my dark fantasies, not dark fantasies,
oh, dear.
But one of my fantasies is...
Dear Penthouse, I never imagined it would happen this way. No.
Yeah. one of my fantasies is that one day we are able to have a horn in.
Oh, I'd love that.
Yes. I don't know how we could make it happen, but we've got to make that happen.
I think it involves some member of the Horn Family Commune congregation winning the lottery.
Well, yeah, but you know, can't say I'm not hoping that won't happen. But you know, I think it would be good to be able to do something like that. The trouble is what you got. What was his name out in Hawaii?
Ken.
Ken, you got Ken in Hawaii.
Scott in Sweden.
Joe Abel out in Australia.
Robert in Australia.
Where would we
Robert in Australia, John Fox. Yep. We've got listeners in Japan, Germany, Ireland, the UK.
So what would be the central meeting location?
I don't know. Let's all agree to meet at the summit of Mount Everest.
Yeah, exactly. You'd have to come up with something.
No, you know what we could do? You know what we could do, since we're just going to sit here and fantasize for a moment? We could set up a cruise. And everybody just fly in and get on the boat, and we'll raise a ruckus on a boat for a week. I mean, that's how that lib boat cruise was set up.
That's an idea. Yeah.
And I think it comes in at about, I think you can get on the boat for like $700 or something.
Probably. If you really work at it and you claim a cabin in steerage or the luggage compartment, might get a little bit cheaper.
Draw me like one of your French girls, Jack. Yeah. I don't know, man. Of course, we have to get past keeping the lights on here, which is always a challenge too. But I think it would be fun to get together, people from all over the country, all over the world. That'd be a blast. Sailing off into the Caribbean. Woo!
Yep. If only we could find our own planet,
I like this one, Kevin. I want to send the right-wingers to their own, preferably one where they can prove that CO2 is good for you by breathing it.
Well,
Mars. Mars needs Republicans.
I've often thought I'd love to... Well, you mentioned it once. Didn't they try that experiment once where a bunch of libertarians got together somewhere down in Central America?
Yeah.
And tried to make it work, and it lasted about 3 months or so?
I don't know exactly what came. I don't know precisely what happened to it.
Yep. I know it ended in utter failure, but...
Well, good. That's refreshing. Also not surprising. But...
No, it isn't, because whether you're talking about your community or the world, we are all interconnected, and there has to be a commons. If everybody is selfish, and it's got to be for me, by me, and only me, it doesn't work for anybody. And that's what the right-wingers don't get, is no matter how you want to paint capitalism, that's what it comes down to. It's a very selfish form of government, and it invariably leaves somebody behind. And the people that it leaves behind sometimes are not the people that are the ones that don't want to work or whatever. Things happen in life, and these people don't want to acknowledge that life is not, what you make of it all the time. It's what, you don't play cards with the hand you want. You play with the hand you're dealt, so to speak. But when you're playing with others, if you all help each other, you usually can make that deck work for you. And that's what they don't want to acknowledge. So, sad, but that's the way it is.
Well, it is, and by the way, Marty has pointed out, Marty just said, if I'm the one who wins the lottery, we'll have the horn in on St. Martin, in the Virgin Islands. Works for me.
Yeah.
Of course, there are cruises that stop at St. Martin, so that could be convenient as well.
Yep. Well, just everybody go out and buy a lottery ticket and, wish real hard, you might win $3.
Hot diggity, don't spend it all in one place.
I've played the lottery ticket twice a week, $2 ticket twice a week, for about 2 years now. The most I have ever won $12. That's it.
Wow.
Now, I don't mind playing, what's $2? You know, $4 a week. What's $4? That's not going to affect my life one way or the other. Even if you add it up over a year, that's not going to make a whole lot of difference. But I find it remarkable that in, 52 times, 104 weeks, that's the most I've won. That's $12.
Well, the odds are pretty long.
Yeah, now I've won $3 here and there, but the most I've won at any one time is $12. I should put it that way. When you add it all up, I probably won $25 altogether.
Well, yeah, the odds are designed to pay you back in small amounts. Good God, the odds of winning the jackpot in Mega Millions is 1 in 370 million. The odds of winning the jackpot in Powerball are 1 in 290 million. The odds of winning the jackpot in like a little state-based, we've got a little state-based daily drawing here where you pick six numbers, and the odds there are 1 in 17,000.
Yeah. I know. That's pretty good odds, actually. 1 in 17,000. That'd be worth me playing.
If you get all six numbers on that, you get the grand total of $25,000, which ain't chump change.
No, but it's not.
But the way that one breaks out, it's kind of fun. You get three numbers, you get your dollar back. You get four numbers, you get $10.
Yep.
You get five numbers, you get $250. You get six, you get $25,000.
That's actually not bad, because three numbers out of six, that's going to happen.
Yeah.
That's happened several times to me. So what, $10?
Somehow I'm thinking it's not worth moving to West Virginia for, though, Kevin.
No, probably not. Besides, weed's still legal out here, not Virginia, so West Virginia.
Thank you.
I'll stay out here with
you. We get touchy about that West in front of our name.
We
don't want to be accused of being the Old Dominion, because
we're
the only state that seceded and got away with it, and that was because we seceded from Virginia.
Yeah, but you would be willing to give Joe Manchin back to Virginia, wouldn't you?
I would give Joe Manchin back to Mars, but only if he would take Shelley Moore Capito and Looney Mooney and David McKinley and half of the Democratic Party and all of the Republican Party with him.
Yep. Yeah. If only. But anyway, I'll get off here and let somebody else get on. Just wanted to call in and comment on that, because things like that. I'm like your previous caller. Things like that upset me when I hear it. And I know family members back in Florida are watching that. And like you said, best thing you can do is look over and say, that's what grandpas are,
Yeah.
And just shut up. But it nonetheless bothers me because it's,
well, and I asked that question, Kevin, about do you reckon Joe Manchin ever get high? Let's do pay attention to one fact here. Everybody who's ever gotten high did not stop being an asshole. It's not a cure for assholery. It is just something. Well, you get my point. There are people who can get high and just remain jerks.
Sure, but, I've been around both people that have been high on marijuana, people that have been high on alcohol.
Oh, the high person is by far the lesser of the two.
Exactly. I never worried about my safety with someone doing pot, you know. Now, someone doing marijuana, doing alcohol, and somebody...
Right, I remember the old Robin Williams bit where he said he got pulled over while he was stoned, and the cop came up and said, "Where are you headed, the dentist?" Because he was driving really slow. Tim from L.A. with a little funny for us. What has six balls and screws you twice? The lottery.
There you go. Yep.
Took me a minute. I had to figure out the twice part, but I got there with a little help. Kevin, have yourself a good evening. Good to hear from you.
You too, and we'll talk to you maybe this Friday.
All right, sounds good, Kevin. Bye now.
Take care.
My buddy Kevin calling from Colorado Springs. I love the way some of generally I love the way our community's minds work. You know, we are Borg after all. Marty says, No. The right wingers have spoiled this planet, and I will not, to the best of my ability, allow the commission of an act of interstellar war by allowing the right wingers to infect the universe. See, that's where Marty and I think oppositely. I think we need to let the right-wingers go into space so that the peace-loving aliens will notice these little interstellar barbarians, blast them into their atomic particles, and then come and help usher in an era of peace, happiness, and tranquility on planet Earth, which they will have the technology to hopefully fix. I guess that just makes me mean. Both lines open now, 304-663-HORN, 304-574-8178 is the other line. We call that Herald. And, of course, Skype to Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn, is available all over the planet for anyone who wants to get involved in the conversation. And that someone would apparently be our buddy Ron. Hey, Ron.
Hi, Bob.
How are you? Okay, you're looping back at me now.
Okay, I'll sign off and figure out how to do this right.
Just turn your speaker, just mute your speakers. I think you got it. Or not.
Or not. Bye.
Bye. Sometimes it can get a little confusing on the Skype line. By the way, our buddy, the Angry Indian, pointing out, W is still the best living example of someone who used to drink, smoke, and get high on rich man's power and still remained a problem for the global society. Rich man's powder, that is. Powder. Bolivian marching powder. Right. Yeah. Yeah, George apparently spent a pretty fair amount of time, probably in the 80s, skiing on his nose, as it were. Let's see if Ron sorted it out. How are we doing this time, Ron?
Christ, you'd never guess I make my living on the edge of cyberspace.
this is just a little too prosaic for you, I think.
I'm going to chalk it up to jet lag this time.
Okay, that works too. I mean, because you do have some.
I do. But Reverend Elijah is counseling me through it.
The Reverend Elijah Craig is a top-notch Baptist counselor. one of the better Baptist ministers ever to take to the pulpit or the still in the new United States of America.
Before I start telling you lies and rejoinders, I should mention a conversation I had with the Queen of the Minions a while back.
Oh yes,
on a side channel. And I observed that despite the fact that I had lived in Haight-Ashbury in 68 and 69, I kept trying that devil weed. And every time I tried, regardless of the strain, one toke and Ron went to sleep. And I finally figured out, the Scott in me figured out, well, this is just stupid because you're spending money to go to sleep.
Yeah, when you can do that without spending any money at all.
Right. And you can tell me about the great sex and how good food tastes and how good the music sounds, but it's really hard when you're asleep.
Were you just taking, like, really, really great big Hoover vacuum cleaner hits? Maybe that was the problem?
No.
Darn.
I bring
and,
this
and,
up.
And well, I gotta interrupt, though, Ron, and just note that for a hillbilly boy to make it all the way out to Haight-Ashbury at the height of the experience, you were an ambitious hillbilly traveler.
Well, I had some added incentives that made life interesting as well. I had a white wall haircut, and I was in the Navy.
Ooh.
But I did manage to find an apartment to rent the first summer I was there that was me and three females. And I was paying for one bedroom all to myself, and they had the other two. And I was the only straight guy there, so it was great.
I was going to say, this does not sound terrible.
No, it wasn't. But it was an interesting growth opportunity, and I tried to rise to the occasion just before I went to sleep.
Oh, you're shameless. You know that? Growth opportunity. Rise to the occasion. Daggummit. This is a family program now. Stop that.
Okay.
What would your sister say?
Well, she's probably laughing right now.
Oh, okay.
And I got a brother-in-law that's probably shaking his head. Both listeners, by the way.
Oh, yes, I know.
Anyway, I wanted to regale you with some interesting stories.
Oh, do regale me, please.
Of traveling to a place that creates a lot of stereotypes and is very dissimilar from what most people perceive. And that would be the traveling over to the Emirates. I was just there last week. I'm going back again in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, the UAE.
UAE. And I was there fairly regularly, part of another job I had, 25 years ago. And this trip I went into Abu Dhabi, and it has transformed itself in 25 years into an absolutely, large parts of that city are absolutely beautiful. It's like they completely skipped the part where they have to tear down old neighborhoods to build new ones.
Yeah.
They're reclaiming land and building just some absolutely beautiful architecture over there.
Well, I saw the pictures of the mosque, and it was exceptionally beautiful, and the detail work was amazing.
The workmanship was incredible, and they were doing that kind of stuff 1,000 years before, you know, the middle of it, long time before the Pope decided he needed all the gold to build the Vatican. It's just an amazing place. Saw many, many beautiful women. And let me tell you, a burqa, if it's tailored right, when it starts swaying in the breeze, you saw the photo I think I sent you of the lady in the high heels?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I got to tell you, that was a symphony in motion. And I appreciate art. I always have. And that was art. And the women smell gorgeous. I didn't see a single goat or camel. It was like going to the kind of cities we would like to build if we chose to live to some place where it got to 40, 42 degrees centigrade.
Which is, for idiots like me, hot.
104.
But it's a dry heat.
No, it's not. It's right on the Gulf, right beside the water, Bob.
I'm trying. Work with me.
I know. I walked outside one day. I'm wearing my Canadian worsted wool sports coat and tie because we do business in ties over there. And I walked out, stood for 2 minutes waiting on the taxi at the hotel, turned around and walked right back inside to the bar. Took a break.
Hold on. Bar?
Oh, yeah. Probably the only... That's another misconception. The only two countries where you can reliably count on not being able to get a drink easily is Saudi Arabia and Kuwait.
Iran?
You can get a drink in Iran. But there's a perception that there's no alcohol. And it's wrong. I mean, I led trade missions through that part of the world. I was something called a senior trade commissioner for the Canadian government for a few years. And I had high-tech trade in Middle East and Asia. And I used to lead trade missions through there with 10 or 15 companies. And I would set it up dry country, wet country, dry country, wet country. And I had a lot of people sign up for my trade mission simply because they knew it wasn't going to be a disaster. And Bahrain you can drink, Qatar, or Qatar as they're calling it now, the Emirates, you can get a drink in Egypt without too much difficulty at all. Jordan is just drop dead beautiful. And so there's so many stereotypes that people have of that part of the world. And all the time I was over there, by the way, my mom, who watches Fox, lives in Ohio and denies that she watches Fox all the time.
But does.
And she just knew I was going to get killed by them headloppers.
Well, that's all it is over there is headloppers.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And she told a nephew of mine that I was traveling over in the Middle East somewhere to some country called Ebola.
No, she didn't.
Yea, verily, son, she did.
Oh.
Of course, this is the same nephew that's in the Sympathy Orchestra, too.
Okay, well, you know, he better be careful, because depending on what kind of instrument he plays, you can get a bad dose of that Carpenter's Tunnel syndrome.
So anyway, I strapped on an airplane again, and went wandering over there. I enjoyed myself. I survived. I was even more impressed this time than I have been on previous trips, and I'm going back again in 2 weeks.
Well, let me just put a few questions to you, if I may.
Certainly.
For instance, as we speak, I'm wandering around the UAE with through the good offices of Google Earth, and I must note that there is a certain sameness to the landscape around there.
98% of it, yes.
I mean, like, drop a marble and it doesn't move.
I'm packing a sand wedge in my next trip.
Anything short of 35 degrees and you ain't getting out. but when you look at a landscape like this, so I suppose the country feeds itself on imports?
Not really. To a large extent, yes. But there are areas in Oman, for example, that grow a great deal of produce and vegetables. There is a phenomenal variety of food available. A lot of it seems to be locally grown, probably at subsidized great expense. There's a major transition going on to a grain called quinoa.
South America's gift to the world.
Right.
Gluten-free.
A lot of seafood.
I thought that was forbidden.
No. Some is. A lot of seafood. I had lobster and soft-shell crab. Just wonderful stuff. And if you like lamb, it's the best part of the world to travel in. I love a good rack of lamb.
Oh, lamb done well? Absolutely. Lamb done poorly? Not so much.
Yeah. Well done and lamb don't seem to go together for my palate, but if it's done properly, oh, it's just so flavorful.
I get, and I'm guessing they're not they don't follow the mint jelly tradition there.
No. As soon as they kicked the bricks out, the mint jelly went with them.
Not the worst idea in the world.
No.
But okay. So we're getting some questions related to your travel, Ron.
I can't get into chat because Java's given me a big finger last couple of days.
Yeah, it's been throwing me some curveballs too, but I just swear at it so far. Marty wants to know what kind of aircraft did you fly over on?
I flew to Heathrow on a 777 in a nice comfortable seat, and then I flew from Heathrow back and forth each way on an Airbus 380-800 on the upper deck.
Ooh, that's the new highfalutin.
I've been around big airplanes for years, Bob, and I swear to God, that thing looks too big to fly. I used to say that about 747s. And I have some OCD elements, and I've always timed the takeoff run for aircraft. And most commercial aircraft, it's 30 to 35 seconds. The Airbus has a nose camera in it,
yeah,
a tail camera, and you can watch on a straight downward pointing camera, which you can dial up on the little screen in front of you. And I'm watching the runway stripes go by at Heathrow on the way out. We took 52 seconds.
That's a lot of runway.
That's a lot of runway, but this sucker starts off real slow.
Oh, I can imagine. I mean, how many people were on it?
550, but it can carry, depending on the seating configurations, if they go cattle class for the whole thing, like some airlines do if they're taking pilgrims into Mecca, 800 people a plane.
Good God. But you had, you were not in steerage.
No, no. But I have discovered that, like many showgirl wives have taught lessons to people, you can put on any kind of airplane, and no matter how nice it looks, after 22 or 24 hours in various aircraft, they all feel the same.
Oh, absolutely. And no matter how large the aircraft, they can all be made equally uncomfortable.
Yep.
I mean, I flew steerage Atlanta to Paris, and that was just a little under 8 hours, and I thought, oh God, it was awful.
Like we got stuck at Heathrow for a few hours on a layover, and then got on the plane. We hit cruising altitude, seatbelt turns off. I had two or three beers that I'd rented. We hadn't been in the air with the seatbelt off for 5 minutes. I went into the head, and somebody had already pissed all over the seat and floor.
Nice.
Yeah, and I said some variation of that with some Anglo-Saxon action verbs. Travel, the actual transit process itself, you can do some things to make it seem better for a while, but basically it sucks.
Well, yeah. Look, I mean, I deal with my own demons. My nicotine addiction is a real problem flying. And the patch, well, I've done that. It's okay. They won't let you vape. So the upshot of that is I never drink on an aircraft because it just makes me, yearn for a smoke.
So they yell at you when you do that.
Well, right, exactly. They get downright inhospitable. From Heathrow to the UAE, what airline?
Emirad, which is the government airline. The other one is called Emirates Air, and which is, I think, has some element of government ownership. Both absolutely world-class airlines.
Oh, top-notch service, the works. Yeah.
Yeah, and don't take this wrong, but there's not a Harridan in the crew. And it's friendly, understand the concept of service, and like the Emirates paid, I think, damn near $6,000 for my round-trip ticket. Outrageous amount of money on their own airline, so I assume it's going to be break-even as far as they're concerned. But the whole concept of service, it's, you know, like flying 40 years ago. And, they, you know, it helps, but it doesn't completely ameliorate the experience of travel and jet lag.
No, not by any stretch of the imagination.
Any more questions coming in?
I've got a bunch.
Oh, well, go for it.
So the UAE is essentially an autocracy, right?
Yeah, it's a family-run business.
And it relies, and understand, I use words that are freighted with negative, with pejorative connotations, and I don't intend them that way. The UAE operates on the principle of the benevolent despot.
Agreed. And I'm not convinced that's a bad thing in that part of the world for that particular time and place, because the key word is benevolent. The young folks I talked to there in the government agency I was working with all received up to graduate level degrees in world famous universities at government expense, and they don't have to pay it back. All they had to do was maintain their grades. Over 90% of the Emirati population, the citizens, speak English. Very high degree of literacy. Free health care to world-class standards, probably better than Canada's. And they love the government. They're revered. It's hard to imagine the government, but they do.
One of the nastier things about the Saudis, for instance, is the fact that they practically have a slave class of imported laborers.
Yes.
Does the same thing obtain in the UAE?
The UAE, 85% of the population of the UAE is expatriate. And Saudi is one of the last places that the expats will go to because they pay poorly and it's not a pleasant experience. It's not the same in the UAE. They're probably better employers than Walmart for sure. And from the part of the world where most of the workers are coming from, that's like landing a dream job to them. But you talk to folks who have been there for 40 years and they're sending money back home. The UAE, Oman, Qatar, and to a certain extent Bahrain are the places where you really want to go because they treat people right. I say Bahrain because Bahrain's got this thing going on between Shia and Sunni and, people walking around peeing on the fence lines a lot. So there's some stress in Bahrain, but certainly not in the UAE or Oman.
Well, in the last couple of days, I've been doing a lot of reading and hearing things elsewhere about obvious tensions in the region. It's not that far from the UAE
to Yemen.
And not that far is a relative term, but we've got the U.S. has a task force or a carrier group at least bobbing around in the ocean in the Gulf of Aden, waiting on an Iranian flotilla of what are thought to be or said to be, and how much of this, you take, if it comes from the Pentagon, you take it with a grain of salt because, you know, propaganda, that these are surface, the Iranians are trying to get surface-to-air missiles to the rebels who are fighting against the Saudis, who are bombing the snot out of Sana'a in Yemen. And of course, the UAE is a relative stone's throw away from Iran. Is there any kind of a sense of nervousness on the streets, or did you hear anything along those lines?
None. Not a bit. And I will admit I was tied up in meetings, but a lot of those meetings were with government officials. I also met with folks from the Canadian embassy, and nobody seems nervous. Mostly because I think they sort of believe that the idiots will kill each other, and Iran's not stupid. It doesn't have a history of being stupid, despite some of the more egregious press they get. The Saudis are going to, bomb the crap out of people from the air, but the Saudis know, and everybody over there seems to understand as well, you're not going to go in and win it on the ground in Yemen. So nobody expects the Saudis to put troops on the ground until they do.
Well, when's the last time the Saudis put troops on the ground anywhere?
good point.
I mean, the last time that troops came riding up out of the Arabian Peninsula was the First World War, wasn't it?
Yeah, kind of. Weren't they led by some Brit?
Yeah.
But the one thing I did detect is that there's a feeling or an impression that reluctantly Saudi Arabia seems to be stepping up to the plate in the sense that somebody over there in the region needs to be big enough and powerful enough to counter Iran. It's not going to come from Iran.
Well, yeah, it's a struggle for hegemony.
Yeah, and the struggle between Shia and Sunni.
And I was going to say, the UAE is, of course, Sunni.
It is.
And ethnically, Arabs are not Persians, and Persians are not Arabs. And some of this, beyond the Sunni versus Shia, there's an element of this that is ethnic rivalry.
Absolutely. It's an absolutely fascinating part of the world, and I really enjoy every opportunity I get to go there, because almost everybody you meet has a sense of history. And I don't run into a lot of Canadians every day that have a sense of history that goes back much more than 100 or 150 years. When they talk history over there, they're talking 2,000 or 3,000 years. And they have just have a whole different perspective on it. It's a refreshing thing to, I don't claim to understand it, but I really find it interesting.
Let me back you up because I have more questions about the aircraft. What about the accommodations on this A380?
Well, the Queen of the Minions referred to it as bitching, but the nice sleeper seats were fine. I actually preferred the ones on Air Canada. I had a little more room to put stuff, and I tend to work when I'm on a plane, and I had more room on the Air Canada flight to store, reference materials, and my computer just seemed to be a little more comfortable. The one thing I will mention about accommodations on the Etihad version of the 380 is up front, beyond first class, which I didn't even get to, they have a three-room residence in the nose of the plane with a butler, plus a full comm suite where you can set up your own encryption before you get on board, so even the airline can't monitor your communications.
Well, it's interesting you would bring that up, because I'm not sure if you saw the story in the last couple of days about the man who was refused a seat on a United Airlines plane. Did you have
no?
Okay.
No.
So this is one of those guys who is a, as far as I could tell, self-proclaimed security expert, and he claimed to have been able to hack into the computer systems aboard a United Airlines aircraft. And so when he was flying to, he was preparing to fly to some sort of security conference, and they just flat said, "Nope, you're not going to fly on our plane."
Good for them. The basic communications, even when I was on the, I had a downlink speed on the Etihad flight to Abu Dhabi. My downlink speed in the air was, I think I tested it, did a speed test on it. It was about 450 kilobits down and about 50 kilobits up. That's not bad. But I was sending everything encrypted. So anybody that wants to hack into the computer-controlled flight systems, et cetera, on an aircraft, even if you threaten it, that's right up there with saying, "I've got a bomb in my bag." Yeah, I would have tried to get the guy thrown in jail.
Well, I questioned the wisdom of putting that information out there.
It's a free for profit media, Bob.
Well, there you go.
Is the head dead yet?
I know. Give them dirty laundry, right?
Yeah. And I guess if there was one thing I would tell people, it is you really shouldn't be afraid of going to a lot of the countries in the Middle East. The people are wonderfully hospitable, friendly. Food is wonderful. If you can handle the heat, go for it.
Desert cultures tend to evolve. Maybe I'm speaking overly broad, overly generally, but they tend to evolve hospitality concepts that arise out of the ferociously unforgiving nature of the environment.
Yep, it's a survival thing. Maslow's hierarchy of needs. I'll help you today, you'll help me tomorrow, and I can meet a complete stranger and be confident that I'm going to be invited inside the tent, given some sustenance, and I'll survive.
Yeah.
It's not a bad concept.
No, it's not. Here are the details. I just dug this up real quick. The guy who was refused to be seated is a fellow by the name of Chris Roberts, and he was banned from boarding the plane, a flight from Colorado to San Francisco. He was speaking at what's described as a major security conference.
The RSA conference, yeah.
And corporate security stopped him at the gate. And he's the founder of something called One World Labs, and they try to discover security risks before they are exploited. Here's where he ran into trouble. This strikes me as just being assholery. Earlier last week, he was taken off of another United flight by the FBI. They had just landed in Syracuse, New York. The FBI showed up and questioned him for 4 hours because this asshole, I know of no other word, tweeted that he was such a hacking security hotshot that he could make the oxygen masks deploy on a plane.
Did he?
Well, no, he didn't. He just said that he could, and that was enough to get his laptop and his other electronics confiscated. His lawyers complaining that they haven't seen a search warrant. You know, we don't do search warrants in fascist countries. And this country's gone fascist, Ron. It just has. Airline spokesman Rashawn Johnson said to the AP, given Mr. Roberts' claims regarding manipulating aircraft systems, we've decided it's in the best interest of our customers and crew members that he not be allowed to fly United. However, we are confident our flight control systems could not be accessed through techniques he described.
And I would agree. But this is a guy that's got a... You just said he had a small company?
Oh, he's got a company.
My take would be he's generating publicity.
Yeah, he's trying to build some interest. But he's doing it in a really sleazy way.
Well, he watches Fox. I mean, that's a model.
Among other things, he said, quite simply put, we can theorize on how to turn the engines off at 35,000 feet and not have any of those damn flashing lights go off in the cockpit. He told Fox News.
And I can theorize about a trip to Jupiter. Doesn't make it any more real. Oh, by the way, Bob, speaking of science fiction.
Yes.
I read Altered Carbon.
Okay, and do we get a review? No spoilers. Well,
no spoilers. Very, oh, wow. I enjoyed the book. He's an excellent writer, does excellent dialogue, does excellent mental dialogue, wonderful erotic scenes.
Yeah, he does. Handling sex scenes in any circumstance is always a challenge, and he does that very well. I thought. I don't know. I'd have to hear from some women who'd read his stuff to see if it worked for them too. But as a guy,
from a male perspective, it worked for me. And I'm going to track down the other books in the series and read them.
Yeah. Well, there's only three, and he has sworn that he will never write another Takeshi Kovacs novel, which is a pity. There's three of them. The next one is Broken Angels, and the third one is Woken Furies. His brilliance lies in the way he writes things in such a way that simply invites you to become a part of that present. It's almost like he's assuming you know things from that future, which
right.
Of course you don't, but you just somehow get sucked in. They are among the most brilliant pieces of speculative science fiction that I have ever read. And the fact that they're really, you know, that they've got a... Well, the first one, it's no giveaway to say that it's science fiction, but it's also noir detective fiction at the same time, which you don't find a lot of.
No. And the thought occurred to me at least a half a dozen times. Trying to put myself in the mental state of a person who comes back in a shell that's black. Before that, they were white.
Yeah, and it happens.
Comes back in a shell as a female. And before that, he was a male. How in the hell do you deal with that? How do you define schizophrenia in that environment?
Exactly. Exactly. The backstory that he creates of the revolutionary Quellcrist Falconer.
Oh, some of the philosophy there, the verging on poetry, it was wonderful.
Oh, the classical British education was clearly not wasted on this guy.
No.
And when you now you understand why I so frequently cite that make it personal passage.
Yeah. As soon as I saw that passage, I went, oh, I wish Bob were here.
Yeah,
you'd be sitting there on the airplane wishing you could have a smoke.
Well, yeah, probably. For a flight that long, you strap on the patch. You buy the strongest patch that they have, and you strap two or three on, and you hope for the best.
I think I mentioned that 20, 25 years ago, I was doing a lot of trade missions, and we had, in the Department of Foreign Affairs, we had two officially approved drugs of choice. And one was Imodium D, which will stop cracks in the Grand Coulee Dam.
Right, yes.
The other one was gravel, but only after dinner and only after a double. Get a, do dinner, a double, and a gravel, and you'll go to sleep for 4, 5, 6 hours. And you won't wake up all dopey. And it still works. I don't know what it is.
I've never even heard of that.
Pardon?
I've never even heard of that.
Oh.
Of course.
Well, you heard it here first. No charge.
Spell it?
G-R-A-V-O-L.
I'll be damned.
It's for motion sickness.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Who knew? But, you know, a good double after dinner and a gravel, and within 15, 20 minutes, you'll just doze off to sleep, and you'll wake up a few hours later. They'll be shaking your shoulder and going, would you like breakfast, sir?
Nice.
Yeah.
Of course, I don't know, even with something like that, I don't know if that does you any good back in steerage. Because for me, at, you know, at 6'2", 250, there's nothing that's going to work. It's nothing. I mean, nothing is going to make those seats work.
Yep. Well, let's put it this way. I've flown in the back of planes a lot more than I have the front. Enough to where I can appreciate being in the front, but not enough to make the pain in the ass go away from 15 or 20 hours on airplanes.
Well, yeah, and it seems invariably that I always get parked in front of another guy who's 6'2 and 250, who's got his knees some, and it's not his fault.
Yeah.
It's just the nature of the beast. He's got his knees in my kidneys.
I always end up with the guy on an aisle seat, or the guy who's in the window seat, who has a bladder the size of a pea.
Yeah, the overactive bladder guy, right.
But he's also the dude that's open ordering beer.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
No, I think I've sat next to that guy. Excuse me, pardon me, excuse me. One side, lady with a baby, hot pizza, layover. One side, let her rabbit through. Yeah.
And you'll never accept the gracious offer of...
Would you like to swap?
Yeah. Well, they don't, generally speaking, except for air marshals, they don't allow guns on airplanes. And it's not just for the fear of having the aircraft hijacked. You would have passengers shooting each other.
So. Yeah, accidentally. I mean, we had the story, what, last night? About the genius who was just out strolling.
You got the balls to bring this one up again?
Well, I mean, you know, just the... It worked right in with what you brought up. You know, you're just trying to get out the row, and you know, you'd wind up protecting freedom against somebody that wasn't threatening it.
Yeah, I thought you were talking about the guy in L.A.
Yeah, the guy in L.A. who was just out taking a walk, and you said you've got the balls to bring this up again. You're a pro, Ron. You're a pro. But that would be ball. In this guy's case, that would be ball.
Yeah. So, well. I'm sorry, I'm an inveterate punster. I can't help it. But, in any event, any other questions before we let somebody else monopolize the airways?
Well, did you happen to check to see if you wind up staying there for any more extended period of time, will it be worth your while to bring your sticks?
Yes, I did actually. Enlightened self-interest.
Yeah, I'm not seeing any. I'm not seeing so much as a putt-putt course here.
Look for the Abu Dhabi Golf Club. It's not too far away from the Sheikh Zayed Grand Mosque out towards the airport.
Man, I'd hate to ding my slice off that dome. I'd feel real embarrassed.
You'd have to hit a 250-yard drive to get beyond the perimeter. That's 35 acres there.
Oh, my God.
It is a phenomenally big place, and it starts rising up a half a mile away. You can see enough of it to think, I ought to take a picture of that.
And everything there is named after Sheikh Zayed, is it not? I mean, there's Zayed Sports City, there's the Zayed Stadium.
Yeah, he was the founding benevolent despot, if you will. back when the Emirates were created. And there's two Emirates that people have heard of, which is Dubai and Abu Dhabi, and there's five others that nobody has heard of. And at least three of them I have heard are just absolutely wonderful to travel to. It's like going back to Lawrence of Arabia days, but with a resort hotel. Only one or two, not many tourists.
Well, it looks like they're reclaiming a lot of land from the sea just based on this.
They are. And
so I presume there's desalination plants and everything for water.
All of the water for Abu Dhabi is from desalinization.
How's it taste?
Wonderful. A little bit flat, but there's certainly no additives to it. And
no fluoride mandrake?
Don't think so. And they're building, while I was there, I was reading in the local paper that they're building underground storage caverns in the event to deal with the event of a drought, in the sense that they will still need water to for agriculture, watering the parks, of which there's quite a few, or in the event that there's some kind of a critical infrastructure issue and the pumps don't work. Okay, we need some storage. So they're putting up enough for 90 days in Abu Dhabi. And I assume Dubai is doing the same thing. And, you know, all that population of the Emirates are living in less than 2% of the land.
Yeah,
as you say, you could drop a golf ball and it wouldn't move.
Yeah, it's flat.
I'm looking at the
mountainous archipelago out at the far tip.
Yeah, there. And you'll discover that there's two provinces out there that aren't part of the Emirates. They're actually separated little areas that belong to Oman. Like right on the tip is Oman.
Yeah.
But there's resort areas out there. There's resort areas on the islands not too far away from Abu Dhabi. And their markets were not, hotels and service and the level of, I guess you'd call it non-rustification. They went for a sophisticated crowd.
Well, this is a culture that had come up with concepts of like bathing and running water back when our European ancestors were still fighting with the buzzards for what the wolves didn't want.
Yeah, or pissing out of windows.
Well, yeah, and throwing it out. Right.
Yeah.
You know, I'm looking at all this just thinking, man, if you wanted to do a really totally faithful to the text remake of Dune.
Perfect.
Wow.
Perfect.
Yeah. Yeah. And just to go back to Altered Carbon for a minute, God, if Richard K. Morgan knew the free press we were giving him, one of the things I checked out as soon as I was done with it, because it creates so many visuals for you. My God, it's just so rich visually. It forms a movie in your head.
Yeah, are you one of those people that read a book? I am one. I'll declare it right up front. And I form a mental picture, sometimes based on areas where I grew up, but I form a mental picture if the writer's good enough. And I'm sort of there.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And then if I dream about it, I get to watch the movie version.
Right.
And I checked this. I guess that book was optioned almost as soon as it came out, and still nothing. But just because this is how these our conversations run, they're web-like and they're neither vertical nor horizontal. We can go all over the place. I watched a fascinating film the other evening. Agnes and I did, called The Zero Theorem.
Hmm.
And it's another old, who was the Python who did Brazil? Terry Gilliam. It's a Terry Gilliam film. It's a dystopian future. It's based on computer, you know, sort of a advanced cyber life. And having read Altered Carbon, you'll know what I mean, that when I saw the outdoor advertising, I immediately thought, man, if you could turn Altered Carbon over to Terry Gilliam, it would be done right.
What was the name of the little village up somewhere up the coast where he was going and there was an old freighter or an old carrier that was tied up?
Yeah, it was a carrier that had run aground, and oh, God, all I can remember is Anichan Salomao.
Yeah. And the holographic billboards.
Yeah. And the advertising that goes into your mind. That just grabbed me. But the designer drugs, the idea of, he coins this term called Experia.
Yep.
Which, you know, it's like beyond 3D entertainment. You know, you're plugged into it, I guess. It's all so fascinating, just to contemplate, and the idea of digitally storable human life.
Yep. And virtual porn.
Yeah, well, like I said, just wait until you get into Broken Angels and then Woken Furies.
Don't stop
now, Ron.
Oh, okay.
I gotta have somebody to talk about Richard K. Morgan with.
I don't have a history of stopping, Bob.
So. Good for you. I don't want to ruin anything, but that scene of the mansion, you know, looking out at the Pacific
with the telescope.
Yeah, I can see it. I can see it. I mean, if I had any talents at all as a visual artist, I could storyboard the whole thing. But the coolest thing is that the protagonist, you know how Indiana Jones has to be played by
who?
You know, by Harrison Ford, unless you're doing, like, you know, a J.J. Abrams Star Trek reboot.
Right.
Well, the neat thing about the Takeshi Kovacs series is that Takeshi Kovacs might be one voice, probably not even that, but he'll be played by three or four or five different actors.
Yep. And it takes a while getting... When you're reading the book, it takes a while, and he does ease you into it, but it takes a while to get your mind around the idea that your physical appearance can change at the drop of a hat.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden you got boobs, and you didn't before.
Yeah.
But... I think the one thing that really jumped out at me, and it was one little section where he was writing about the first time he met the wife.
Yeah.
22 years old, just absolutely incredible body, and he's talking to her, and he sees eyes that are 300 years old.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's the best piece of science fiction writing that's been done in the last 20 years, I think.
And having read it, I would agree, and I want to thank you again for pushing it two or three times, and I finally got a copy of it.
Well, the fun thing is, after you've read all three, lay them aside, you can go back a year and a half later and re-enjoy them. I do that. Because I like to catch nuances that I missed the first time around.
You know the other series I do that with? Is the Foundation trilogy.
Yeah, yeah, Asimov.
Yeah. It's not as well written, but for its time, it's every bit as interesting.
No, and as a teenager, I read an absolute boatload of Robert A. Heinlein. And it has not...
Bradbury, I'm sure.
Yeah, but Heinlein in particular has not worn well because as I grew older and more politically mature, I realized that he was hustling libertarian snake oil.
What about Bradbury?
I don't think his politics are as obvious as a lot of people read into them, simply because he went on to describe what was in his mind when he wrote some of these things, like Fahrenheit 451. And it was not the political screed that a lot of people read, the socio-political cultural screed that a lot of people read into it. Ray Bradbury said he just thought people were watching way too much TV, and he took it and ran with it from there.
What about Orson Scott Card?
I'm not so familiar with him.
Ender's Game. He wrote about 15 books in the Ender series.
Yeah, and I know one of those got movie-ized and got.
And the movie sucked.
Yeah, right. That was generally what.
It was awful.
I think it would be fun if somebody would take a run at Joe Haldeman's Forever War.
I listened to one of your broadcasts, archived in the Emirates, and you touched another chord on another author, John D. MacDonald.
Oh, golly, yes.
And your idea of doing a series on the Travis McGee novels?
Yeah.
Oh, I think I've read every one of them at least twice.
I have. And I think they would be wonderful, but I don't know if the roles that he writes for women would be acceptable in the second decade of the 21st century. But then again, look at the success that Mad Men had.
Yep, and a lot of movies that are set back in the 60s and 70s would, or 50s even, if they're done well and you get the sense that they reflect the time, like Mad Men, then you'll still get a lot of gripes and complaints, but most people will generally accept, well, that's the way it was. Like Civil War movies. Everybody accepts that there were slaves in Civil War movies and bad slave owners, etc. But, in modern-day terms, people accept the fact that was then, this is now, we've moved on. But I would love to see a Travis McGee series. I don't know who would play the actor, the protagonist.
If you were to do it, one of the realities is that for people of, roughly our age, we think in terms of movies. But that's all changed. There's such a stunning degree of quality being produced, in particular by HBO, but by some of the other pay services. And hell, Mad Men was AMC. There's all kinds of possibilities that open up. So, you wouldn't necessarily have to have a huge name star. You've got to have somebody that fits the physical description, good actor, who can be aged with makeup over the course of 20 years, because the first Travis McGee is 64, and the last one is in the early to mid 80s.
Okay, two quick points. First of all, I was racking my brains trying to remember, and I refused to check Google, to remember the name of the car that McGee had. He gave it a name, and I couldn't remember what it was. I don't know if it was an old Rolls.
Yeah, it was a bizarrely modified Rolls.
Yeah.
That had been turned into a pickup truck.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'll remember it, and I'm determined to remember it without checking Dr. Google.
No, when it happens to you at 3:43 a.m. Daylight time.
Write
it down, or just jump on Facebook and send me a message, because wasn't it Mrs. Somebody or Aunt Something or
Mrs. Yeah. And the other specialty network series that blew me away from the first time I saw it. And it seems that relatively few people watched it, but the ones who did really were vociferous in their praise was a show called Longmire. Modern day sheriff, Montana, Wyoming, somewhere out there, dealing with all the modern day issues, and he's an old Clint Eastwood tough guy. Just an incredibly well acted series. And if you get a chance, pick it up on Netflix or whatever, watch it. It's worth
it. There's another one out there that I'm absolutely sold on. In fact, Pterodactyl, a mutual friend of Malloy and me up in New York City. Tara has very kindly taken care of me and made sure that I got, where I was supposed to be and just had somebody I could holler to,
right.
Help! Yeah, help! You know, while the hillbilly was in New York. She turned me on to a Cinemax series. There's only been one season of it. I presume they're shooting it now for the second season. It was, like I said, on Cinemax. You don't see a lot of talk about it, but oh my God, just grabs you and drags you through. If you get a chance, if you can find it, it's called The Nick, K-N-I-C-K.
Oh yeah, the black doctor.
Well, there's a black doctor and a genius white doctor, and
yeah,
well, they're both geniuses.
But yeah, I've watched the entire series. It's I've still got all the episodes recorded on my PVR. And go back, and I've watched the whole series twice, actually.
Well, you know, Agnes is a nurse, or was in a former life, and we watched it Mike and Carol Brady style, you know, just kind of sitting up in the bed watching it, you know, midnight, watch it one a night or whatever for 9 nights, and she was just absolutely transported by it, because the realism and the attention to detail of 1900 New York City is astonishing.
Right. And the marvelous transitions we've made in the quality of medicine.
And by the way, the hillbilly nurse, did you happen to notice who she is?
No.
In real life? That's Bono's daughter.
Really?
And she carries off that hillbilly accent very nicely.
Well, if any, to all the people out there in Blogland who are listening, I wholeheartedly subscribe and give a check mark to Bob's recommendation for The Nick. It is definitely worth watching. Well acted, well scripted, well set. The locations are phenomenal, and the attention to detail is just mind-boggling.
The pumps that, and they kick you in the teeth at the very beginning with the very, very graphic depiction of an attempt at a C-section.
Yeah.
But brilliant acting all the way around.
I'm going to bail here, Bob, for a couple of reasons. One is jet lag, and the other one is you need an opportunity to remind the folks of all those numbers and email addresses they can use to send you money. And I'll try to call in again, perhaps a bit more frequently. And I'm doing another trip to the Emirates. I've got more research to do. And if anybody wants me to look at anything or take photos of it, stuff you see from Google, let me know, and I'll check it out.
And this time a freshly charged camera battery, please.
Oh, you noticed that, didn't you?
Yeah, I kind of did. And thanks for mentioning the numbers and everything. And thank you for being an ongoing and most helpful supporter of the Horn, Ron. Thank you very kindly. It's been kind of a slow night. Thanks very, very much to Thomas Jugapunch and to Rick out in L.A. We've got $115 to go for our ordinary evening's fundraising, and trying to wipe out the month of April ahead of schedule, which we can do within the realm of about $800 or so if anybody wants to help out.
Well, thank you, Bob.
Thank you, Ron, and I hope you get over the jet lag soon, and hopefully we'll talk soon.
I think I'll be over the jet lag just in time to strap on another airplane.
Well, I can't say I know how that goes, but I know how the furious pace of travel can run.
Y'all take care.
All right, you too, Ron. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
My buddy Ron recently returned from the United Arab Emirates back home in Canada, displaced hillbilly that he is. And yes, I know. I know the name of Travis McGee's automobile. Thank you for the reminder, though. I was not going to ruin it for Ron, because Ron wants that 3:43 a.m. epiphany. I could tell it. But yes. There are reasons why I should know. Yeah. Kate noting the name of the automobile, and she says, I have the entire collection. I've read Travis 5 times, and no one can play him on screen. Well, no one can be your Travis on screen, Kate. And that's the curse of trying to bring anything to the tube. But I can't help thinking it would be really, really cool. It would be a set decorator and properties person's nightmare and dream come true at the same time. Because if you read the Travis McGee series, you see him keeping up with the times, and there are topics that he touches on that you go, oh, this is going to be interesting. Because he's being a great author, and John D. McDonald was a great author. He sees things as they're developing and where they're going to go. I have not gotten to 5 times through the Travis series, but well, it's one of those if I was on a desert island kind of thing. You'd want the series there, you know, along with a deck of cards and an old mattress, because you could eat the dates from a calendar and a mattress. You could eat the dates from the calendar, drink from the springs of the mattress. That didn't go over well the last time I tried it. Ron just said, Christ, I tied up the lines for an hour. Sorry. No, do not apologize. That's the way conversation radio is supposed to work around here. Oh, let's see. How do we wrap up the program? Well, yes, once again, the PayPal interface is at headonradionetwork.com. We also welcome help from those who prefer to use the U.S. Postal Service. Okay, we will get to what was going to be the main story of the evening. Maybe Thorn in the Side Thursday will happen. But this kind of works for maybe closing the program. Just a gentle reminder on Titanic Tuesday of the Titanic intellects, which are the right wing in this country. Representative Steve Knight is a brand spanking new re-pig licking member of the Congress, and he behaved like it recently. One of the people who considered Republican Steve Knight to be too liberal showed up at a protest against immigrants. There's a right-wing outfit called Save Our State in California, and one of the jackass, probably teabaggers, decided to get uppity with representing Steve Knight. I know I'm not rooting for the teabagger, but it's hard to root for a pig licking. You'll see why. Or you'll hear why, I should say.
Is that what you want to say?
Yeah, do you
want to? We're going to vote you out until you when your term
ends. Hey, listen to what he has to say, guys.
Don't touch him. Don't shift your hand. Don't touch me.
All right? Time, Mike.
It's being recorded.
Understand. I never voted for amnesty. Never.
Oh, come on.
Never.
Did. Why did you
what
run
was
for
the bill number? What was the bill
George
number?
H.R. 240.
Okay. Did you read H.R. 240 all four times?
Wait a minute. The bill was to defund it originally.
I'm going to answer yours, and you answer mine.
Okay, you can talk first.
Let's back up for just a second. So here's our Republican congressman talking to these pissed off teabaggers who hate people for not being quite as, you know, white as they are, perhaps. Chris Matthews recently asked in or observed on camera that Republicans must think their base wears sheets. Well, you know, only because they do. So here we go.
Did you read all four?
No.
Okay. What's your chrome?
All right, Mike. Is that what you want to say?
Yeah. We're going to vote you out in 2 years when your term's
over. Listen to what he has to say, guys.
Don't touch him.
Kind of hard to get, but if you touch me again, I'll drop your ass. Now Save Our State wants Steve Knight, Republican, to apologize because the weirdo right winger was touching him. I imagine California probably has something similar to the common law definition of misdemeanor battery. An unconsented to touching of an insulting or provoking nature. This guy is, by the way, who threatened to drop your ass. This guy's a former LAPD officer. I never voted for amnesty! Of course, there hasn't been an amnesty. It exists only in the fevered, weird brains of the right wing. That's them. That's our Republican majority. What a joy. Yeah. Hey, a little reminder, Dr. Bill is back from being on the road, and he will be back on the air tomorrow. At 1 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, I hope you'll tune in. You'll have, as usual, something to make your brain absolutely, your brain will be awash in things you did not know before. And yes, as we move toward the middle of the week, this makes two nights that we have not met our fundraising goal in a row. All help is great help and much appreciated. Thank you. Thank you to those. Thank you to Rick and Thomas this evening. Thank you to Joyce overnight and Joseph. Thank you one and all. If you haven't contributed to the horn in a while, this would be a great time to do it. Bills are due. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you to John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch. Hope you're feeling better, Ben. Hope all went well. Thank you to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ACHECT, A-C-H-E-A-C-T. .org. And always, always, always. Gina. It's all for you.